It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Hope that you enjoy the show on this Sunday, Easter morning, a very special day, certainly in the world. On the Great Outdoors Show this morning, we are visiting with or reconnecting with Matt Burdine, who the last time we talked to Matt was in a canoe coming down the Mississippi in November, and he was going to get as far as he could before winter set in, and as happened was winter didn't set in so much as the epic floods, which you may recall occurring last November, early December, set in, and Matt was forced off the river, and he's about to head back to the Mississippi River to complete the epic journey from the father of waters, from its headwaters up in northern Minnesota all the way to the Gulf of Mexico. So I thought, Matt, before you jump back in your canoe, and we certainly will connect with you again as you finish your trip, we would connect with you as you're once again headed out on this Easter Sunday, and what a special day for you to be back on the water. Thanks for being with us again on the Great Outdoor Show.
Hello, Charlie. Thank you for that. Yeah, man, it's going to be a special day to begin anew, for sure.
So, Matt, when we last left you, you were at the Iowa-Illinois line up in Keokuk watching the canvasbacks gather. Take us from where we gathered with you to where you were forced off the river.
Let's see. Yeah, it was up there, definitely, and it was during the beginning of the flyway, whenever they started flying down, so that last month and a half on the river, just covered up in ducks flying over, and it kind of became friends with them all. Man, we had to take off in St. Louis because of the high water. The cold weather was an issue because you can build a fire as big as you want out there on the sandbars, but, you know, having sleeping panics is not fun in hypothermic conditions. So had to take off and, yeah, re-beginning.
Matt, when you'd all the way down, you had described you're living in your canoe. Yeah, you also have a mobile office in your canoe with all kinds of electronics, but it's still a canoe, and you said you were sleeping on the sandbars. So for those not familiar with the Mississippi, describe what happens when the river rises, aside from the fact that it becomes extremely dangerous to navigate. Kind of walk us through what happened to you.
Well, you're definitely one with it in the sense that each day, even as you're paddling down, the river's changing in the scenery and the foliage and whatnot. But it's a wild feeling when you're paddling down and, you know, you wake up in the morning and it's 2 feet higher than it was the night before, or a foot higher. And you slowly start seeing the islands going underneath water. And yeah, those last few nights I was sleeping on floating docks of marinas, just no dry land. And, you know, you can paddle into the trees and get on the, you know, levees, but that's south of St. Louis. I can do that, paddle to dry land in a way, but it's dangerous paddling through the trees because of the current. So lots of times now I'll have to tie my canoe up in between two trees and put my hammock over my canoe, sleeping up in the trees at some points.
You actually, Matt, pulled into trees, flooded timber, and strung your hammock up between trees and slept at night?
I haven't had to do that yet, but on this stretch I will, especially if I take the Chaffalot River Basin down instead of the main channel going out to the Gulf of Mexico. So taking a ride at Baton Rouge, and it's all wilderness paddling that way, but that, you know, that definitely I'll be sleeping in hammocks often just because of the spring high water, which is expected.
So, Matt, back us up a little bit. For those who may have not recalled the show we did back in November when you were coming down the upper part of the Mississippi, what provoked you or had you think you wanted to do this trip and in a canoe, and kind of just help us reconstruct, if you will, your thinking behind the whole thing and this epic journey?
Well, it's definitely special and personal because I grew up along the banks of it and what's known as the Mississippi Delta, a place in between Memphis and Vicksburg. So connected to the river in that way, but, you know, grew up always thinking about the river, and now I'm of age. And I'm a river guide in Colorado, so I figured it'd be a pretty cool thing to put in on the river up at the headwaters and be able to act like Huckleberry Finn for, you know, for now 6 months. And, yeah, I'd met paddlers before that had done it, and the clarity of their eyes and, you know, how interesting their stories were definitely inspiring. So, you know, it's 5-10 years ago, not that many people were doing this trip. Now it's starting to pick up. I think anywhere between like 20 or 30 people started last year. So each year it's kind of growing. So it's the next great American adventure for sure.
So don't you also, Matt, have a purpose in doing this? I know you wanted to follow the river, but aren't you also trying to help your mother tragically passed away from cancer at an early when you were at an early age? Is there also not that you're doing something to try to help raise money for cancer research?
Yeah, definitely. Like that earlier question, this trip started out just I wanted to be out there, you know, free thinking, acting like Huckleberry Finn and whatnot, but paddling with a cause. I'm with the Breast Cancer Research Foundation. And so paddling for them, raising money for them as I go along. Right now, I've already funded, you know, it's almost about $14,000 worth of research. $25 equals 30 minutes of research. And there's 200 grantees all across the world, so multicultural, very diverse. And 91% of each dollar goes to research. It's one of the top-rated cancer foundations out there. So, yeah, it's called, the name of the trip is A Million Strokes for a Cure. So they estimate it takes about a million paddle strokes to get to salt water. So there's the name and some photo journaling along the way. A lot of people going through treatment and whatnot are just doing whatever they're following along. So people are having their own river trip looking at the photos.
So a million strokes for a cure.org or what is it, Matt?
It's amillionstrokes.com. The website right now currently is I'm working on it right now, so it'll be up in a few days when I start. But if anybody Googles up a million strokes for a cure, they'll see the Instagram link, the Facebook link, and some articles that have been written, too, for a little deeper story on the trip.
So as you're coming down, Matt, you're all alone. Do you know, obviously, you being a rebel from the deep south, and obviously I've known you, Matt, well, all of your life, but as you were traveling, as you guys say, through Yankee land, did you have many contacts, or were you just totally on your own?
Oh, there's no dividing line for me. Like I said, I mainly live out in Colorado these days. But, you know, just going to the top of America, essentially, right in the middle of America, between the two mountain ranges. There's this Mississippi River Valley. Each town, it was so cool to see how the cultures changed and the dialect and, you know, the inflection and the voices. And now I'm entering into my homeland, you know, down here in these southern states. But I've never been north of Tennessee. I mean, I've been to New York and Seattle, but never up the middle of the country. And it feels good to get in this homeland, too, familiar accents. But it's a great thing.
Yeah, I bet you now get a lot of y'alls and hays instead of other greetings. But let me ask you, the river's getting bigger, you know, every day on you. What's been, and we're going to take a break after just a moment. What's been your biggest surprise, if you will, from the headwaters to where you had to take out? As you look back now, and you've been off the river for about a month or so, because of the conditions, what's been the biggest surprise as you look back on the trip so far?
Good question. Many things, but definitely the self-transformation that comes within a long-distance trip like this. The discipline, you have to have the self-discipline, the constant state of awareness you have to be in for your own safety out of this, you know, huge moving force of nature. You know, just that, and the people, too. It's great meeting people along the way. As I'm meeting the country through land, meeting people of these areas, and it's cool to see how land affects the culture. And the river affects culture. Big surprise.
Well, I know you're headed in now where once the Missouri and the Ohio join together, it becomes a lot bigger river. So when we come back from our break, Matt, I'd love to talk a little about how you're going to handle a stretch of the river that's treacherous. And as you said, this is a dangerous deal. You one mistake and you're in water that's in the 30s and it's all over. So we'll be back in just a moment with Matt Burdine.
Right.
I hope you're enjoying the show. Matt Burdine is, as Matt said, a million strokes for the cure. And this is Charlie Potter. We'll be back in just a moment. Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show, and happy Easter, everybody. Thank you for listening this morning. This is Charlie Potter, your host on the Great Outdoors Show on WGN Radio, and I hope you have an absolutely wonderful Easter wherever you may be listening. And if you're just joining the show, we have reconnected with Matt Burdine of Greenville, Mississippi, who many, many months ago began at the headwaters of the father of all waters, the Upper Mississippi River in Minnesota, and he paddled his way down and had to get off the river with the terrible floods that occurred at a time of the year when there really shouldn't have been any flooding in early December. And now he's about to put back in, and we catch Matt as he, I guess you're putting in at Lewis and Clark this morning. Is that right?
Yeah, Easter Sunday seemed like a good day to put back in, and it just happened to be that way too. So, yeah, right there at the confluence of the Missouri River, right north of St. Louis. Pretty historical spot in the whole grand scheme of things.
And that's where Lewis and Clark took off, right, when they went up to Missouri?
Yeah, that's it. It's where they wintered before they headed upriver. And it's a cool spot. But after St. Louis, there's no more locks and dams. It'll be wide open river and the Ohio River confluence probably pretty soon. And the river picks up, uninhibited river, just wide open, kind of what you'd imagine exactly out of a Mark Twain novel.
So as you were coming down from the head of the river, you had to go through locks and dams. What is it like? How long is your canoe, Matt?
My canoe, it's a 16.5-foot Winona canoe made in Winona, Minnesota. And being in these locks, these huge chambers where these barges come through, it's pretty neat because you're in there alone in this massive chamber of water lowering. And behind you is, 20, 30 feet of the Mississippi River over your head. But, talking about in this modern age, I have music playing from my Bluetooth speakers. If Lewis and Clark had Bluetooth speakers, and Spotify, they'd use it. But in that chamber, though, the acoustics are phenomenal. Sometimes I've even played my guitar in the middle of this chamber and echoes. And then the gates open, and there's the Mississippi River. Head on out.
So you're in these rivers, in these locks with you're like a little pebble on the beach compared to some of these barges and things that are in these locks, I got to believe.
Exactly, but I'm the only one to lock for safety concerns, and sometimes I've had to wait a few hours for a barge to go through. And you're always conversing with the tugboat captains via marine radio and calling the locks, and you kind of plan your day on when to arrive at locks and dams. And it's a pretty cool experience, thank you government for putting me through these things. But it would be much more pleasant if it was just straight river, but the way it is.
So you actually go through all alone? They open and close the locks just for a little 16-foot canoe, huh?
Oh yeah, they're just kind of bobbing around like a floating duck out there. It's been a good spot to resupply. I've had sponsors and whatnot, and people ship me stuff to the Corps of Engineers locks and dams, and they lower you down a package in a rope basket. It's pretty neat.
Let me ask you, Matt. You're now headed, as you said, to the untamed river. There's not another lock and dam till you reach the Gulf of Mexico. What do you have along on your trip with you? How do you resupply? But as you put into the river here on Easter Sunday, what's in your canoe, I guess?
This they term this stretch of the river survival canoeing because lack of towns along the riverbanks and the levees and whatnot. You're in a huge corridor of wilderness. Plus, being in the canoes, you can carry a lot of gear. And I have a box of books with me, my guitar, and plenty of food, black bean burritos and vegetables and pasta and all that good stuff. And basically, I took everything I take whenever I go backcountry into the Colorado Rockies, put that in the canoe in a dry bag, and started paddling.
So where will be your first resupply after you go out of St. Louis?
Yeah, I'll probably stop in Cape Girardeau, of course. It's a cool experience in these river towns. You just kind of resupply as you go. And it'll be about 2 weeks to Memphis. And then from Memphis, I'll be in about 2 days south of Memphis. I'm going to the Juke Joint Fest, a cool blues festival in the Mississippi Delta, and then by the end of April, I'll be paddling into Jazz Fest, or near Jazz Fest, because I'm taking a chapel live, but yeah, so hitting two good music festivals on the way to Saltwater.
That's a little different than the Joliet, Marquette, and Lewis and Clark. That's a little bit of a different journey than they had. So,
that's part of the river, the spontaneity. I hadn't planned on any of this, and it just kind of happened. It's just like, why not?
And how fast do you figure the river? Because you're going to be coming down now in the spring flood, so it's a big river. How fast do you? How many knots do you think the river's moving?
Oh, she's flowing, in between certain areas of the river, anywhere between 4 and 7 miles an hour, maybe. And I paddle on average about 3 miles an hour, but so that means this fast moving water. I don't have to do a lot of paddling, just maneuvering, and it is extremely high water and huge currents, and you have to position yourself right in the river. You have to know where you might hit whirlpool type eddies, whatnot. But usually, if you're in the main channel, you'll be okay.
Well, I certainly have been on the river duck hunting with your father and seen whirlpools that literally swallowed up washing machines. I'm not joking.
Trees, yeah.
So, how do you avoid? We got a couple minutes. couple minutes left, Matt. How do you avoid these whirlpools, which obviously for you would be the end of your life? How do you avoid them?
Just kind of know, as you know, spend a lot of time on water, again, understanding how to read water and where they might occur and what, like, you know, going around banks and whatnot, and curves in the river and different depths and wing dams, because a lot of the wing dams are underwater right now. And so that creates a lot of turbulence. But, you know, in general, if you're in the middle of the channel, you'll be fairly okay. In a way.
Well, yeah, you're in the middle of the channel with 100-foot long, you know, barges that pushed by tugs. How do you do that?
Oh, man. Like some of them are 5 football fields long. You can see them coming from a ways off. You can, you know, but sometimes you come around a corner and there's one. But I have a marine radio, and you can kind of hear traffic, and I might, you know, let people know I'm around this mile marker, and you might hear a captain say, "Hey, I'm about 20 miles down the river, you're clear." And, you know, just cruise along. Take each moment as each moment.
And so you just try to find a place. Of course, you're going to have a high river, but you try to find a place that looks good for camping, and that's where you spend the night, and the next morning you get up and on you go, right?
Definitely. And now because of high water, I'll have to start looking for camp much earlier in the afternoon. Just, you know, had many close calls because, you know, I was like, oh, I'll find another campsite an hour down the river, and next thing you know, a few hours later, it's dark and still paddling. So, yeah, that and I've had my friend John Ruskey, who runs Quapaw Canoe Company out of the Delta East, he's the godfather of the river and paddling in a way. He makes his own cypress canoes and whatnot. He's marked a lot of islands at certain river levels that are campable and whatnot. So definitely entering some home territory, but it's still pure wilderness.
Well, Matt, we wish you well. And just for those of you listening, A Million Strokes for a Cure is, if you Google that or go to amillionstrokes.com, you can follow Matt Burdine on his quest to go from the headwaters to the mouth of the Mississippi down through the Atchafalaya. And Matt, let's plan to catch up as you enter the real wilderness of the Atchafalaya Basin, and that'll be in a couple months, I guess. So thank you for joining us again. That's Matt Burdine, A Million Strokes for the Cure, and thank you for listening this Easter Sunday. It's Charlie Potter, I'm your host of the Great Outdoors Show, Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.